Is it best to avoid people who are spiritually below integrity? That's what all the spiritual teachers, including the great Christian saints, said, to not hang out with such people because they have sort of a collective karma, and just the fact that you're there begins to attract things to it. That's sort of the broken window principle, you know, which sociology has discovered. The broken window, you see, this takes us beyond causality. What attracts negativity is the field, see? It's not sequential causation. It isn't that the broken window causes something. The negative energy which is focused there, the attractor energy field which is focused there, brings upon itself the broken window, which again brings upon itself the drug addict, which again brings itself upon itself the rape, which again brings itself brings upon itself the abandoned baby, and those addicted to crime. And it shows up, of course, initially with graffiti and broken windows and trash on the streets. But you see, it's not causal. It's not that the broken window causes the rape, or that the rape causes the crime, or that the crime causes the drugs. And then the gangs get into turf war over who owns the building. And I remember the last time I saw Brownsville or the lower Bronx, the South Bronx, it was unbelievable. It's like you say, this can't be. You drive through the street and you see where the smoke has come out of all these buildings have been set on fire. And you see where the smoke came out from the window and the side of the windows. The side of the buildings are all black and they're covered with graffiti. The streets are covered with filth. People falling over with drunkenness and alcohol and drugs and prostitution openly on the street. And mugging will take place right in front of your eyes. They don't even give a damn if you watch. They just mug somebody right in front of your eyes. You say, I got to be making this up, you know what I mean? But it's like that energy field is pulling to it itself. So you see a lifetime where a person is born in a very low energy field. They're born into that kind of a neighborhood, to that kind of parents, and unless their energy field changes, awful things will be happening to them throughout their lifetime. So they're born into a miserable condition here, and now they're in juvenile jail here, and they've got multiple misdemeanors, and then that usually graduates to a felony. So when we see a person arrested, let's say everybody gets sad about and politically correct about three times and out in California. You know, and they have some guy, he's put away for life now for stealing a pizza. I'll tell you, he ain't being put away for a pizza. This guy's criminal background goes back to age 6. He's got probably 49 misdemeanors. He's got 23 felonies that nobody detected yet. Two times in prison, you know the third time is going to put you out and you still steal a pizza. It means there's something missing in your frontal cortex, doesn't it? It means you're not very well anchored in reality. It means you can't control your own impulses. No, you've got a disease called criminality that compulsively you're going to keep on doing it because you can't learn from experience, because you're not afraid of consequences, because you can't control your own impulses, and because this has been a lifetime lifestyle. So, like the pedophiles I've treated, you know, I only got busted, you know, one time. And then in therapy you find out he's molested over 100 kids. This is probably the average pedophile that I treated had probably molested at least 50 or 60 to 100 kids before he was arrested. So he's not being arrested for this incident. He's got a record going back this time. He just got caught this time. So you have to have the whole picture, the whole context. So as we said, the lie is composed of taking content out of context. And one thing you'll see that the media does all the time is warp reality by not telling you what the context was. You got busted for a pizza, and what else? And he's stolen thousands of things, literally going back over his entire lifetime. A chronic thief. How many things do you think he's stolen before he's finally arrested? Hundreds and hundreds. The rapists, how many times have they raped? Dozens of times. The pedophile, 50, 100 times. So they're not going to jail for stealing this pizza at all. What's the answer? I don't know what the answer is. To keep them isolated from vulnerable people, as far as I know. I don't know what else to do about them. It seems to be an incurable addiction. And I think it comes from the lower astral. These are lower astrals that have somehow gotten into physical bodies with this. That's a fact, yeah. Because they have no spiritual inclination and no capacity for honesty. Okay. This is traveling through astral realms, which I don't recommend. When did Mother Teresa reach her state of bliss? Early in life or late in life? I don't know. Did she ever write an autobiography or anything biographical? Mother Teresa?
Yeah, she did.
Did she? Mm-hmm. I don't know what she says in there about when she reached that state. Huh?
She doesn't talk.
Oh, she doesn't talk about it. Well, we calibrated, you know, that her heart is extremely high. Her heart was like 700. Mother Teresa's heart was like 700. It came about as a result of Christian devotion. Just, you know, the result of Christian devotion, unswerving devotion to God. And there's a question about avoidance. And see, the ultimate state is neither attached, neither attraction nor aversion. Neither attraction nor aversion. So one surrenders aversions and asks to see it differently, the same as you do with attachments. To have an aversion to something is like the reverse of an attachment. So the ultimate state is non-attached. It means you don't have to be detached. You don't have to avoid it. It's okay if it is and okay if it isn't. Now that isn't as hard to reach as you think it is, you see. This neutrality is a pretty released state. There's a teaching which arose in Sedona, or it was actually in New York, teaching how to get to neutrality. Letting go, wanting to change things, control them, make them different, wanting anything from other people. And it takes you right through neutrality. You know, if you get the job, it's great, and if you don't, you'll find one elsewhere. So it's a state of freedom. And originally when I learned the technique, it was back east in New York, and it was called freedom. And it had to do with letting go attachments and aversions by letting go wanting to change them in yourself or out in the world. And if you continuously do that, you become quite detached. You know, it's true. You become quite unattached. So all the things that you learn, it levels, you know, it isn't that 500 is better than 200. It's not better than. It's just you're in a different space, like being in a different place on the map. Your problem to get from here to there is different if you start out from Albuquerque or you start out from Denver. You're just in a different place, and therefore you're looking at different lessons. But you can go from one level quickly all the way up to the... So you can't say, well, because you're at 200 this week, you can't be at 500 next week. You can be at 500 on the way home in the car. Suddenly, like a flash, you just... Because whatever's blocking it, the minute you let it go, then you open for the light to come in, and the light comes right in. So, how come a person can go from a really great state to a lousy state very quickly in a matter of seconds? That's called being human, huh? It's called being at the effect of being a human and having a human brain. And the human brain, as it's constructed, you understand, is an add-on. The prefrontal cortex, that which makes us human, is an add-on to the old animal brain. The reptilian brain is still there. All the basic primitive brains all throughout the eons from 400 million years ago is still there and still operative. And... you know, by choice, you can become an instant killer. The old dragon is still there, and we've learned not to respond to it. But that impulse to kill still comes up, doesn't it? It comes out of the old amygdala or wherever the hell it is. Yeah. Like the, what's that dragon that one bite and you're dead? something or other dragon. Komodo dragon, yeah. We have permission to calibrate his energy. Let's see. Komodo dragon. It's okay to calibrate his energy. It's over 20, 25, 30, 40, 45, about 45. You get bitten by something that's at 45, you wish you hadn't. Imagine this guy, he was a friend of a movie star or something, he goes into the cage with the Komodo dragon. Oh my God. I think with no boots on or something. Anyway, and he's still alive. So it's possible for a person to do kinesiology with a reasonable degree of accuracy by oneself. See, one thing about kinesiology is you can, by asking a question in many different ways, if you're doubtful about a question, if this is so, then that over there must be so. So if you ask them independently, you'll get corroboration. So if I was questioning the level that I got on the Komodo dragon, I would utilize other things that I know about reptilian life and primitive life and primordial life and contextualize it now within a whole field of data. Then, if it didn't fit the data, I would have to go back in and find out why that is so. What do we say the Komodo dragon calibrated at? 45. So he's worse than Tyrannosaurus Rex, huh?
No, I think
We can do Tyrannosaurus Rex. He's over 65, he's over 70, 75. Tyrannosaurus Rex is at 70, and the Komodo dragon's at what?
45.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's just a curiosity, you know, how do all those creatures line up? I don't want to meet one in the dark, do you? The ego isn't real, is it? That's correct. It's not a reality any more than is mind. Both mind and ego are general terms. The only trouble with using general terms is people believe if a thing has a name, it must have an existence in reality. That's how a great deal of illusion arises. If we have a name for something, then it must be real. A lot of names are merely tautologies. In other words, it means what you define it to mean. And by common usage, it gains ground, and pretty soon the mind begins to think it's a reality. The belief in causality is the most serious error in that regard. You see, because sequentially one thing follows another, we now impute from imagination something mysterious within the world called causality. Well, if you dissect all these things here, you show me causality, you won't find any, because there ain't no causality there. The causality is within the belief system of the observer. It has no objective independent existence. This is demonstrated mathematically, of course, in quantum mathematics, quantum mechanics, where what you find is what you look for. What you discover is based on intention. Whatever your intention is what you're going to come up with, because you just defined it. By defining it, you're obviously going to select what you've already defined. So in other words, a pseudo-objectivity tends to reify itself. You know what reify means? To constantly, in a feedback, reinforce itself, because you believe in the reality of something that exists only in mind. When you look out there, you think you get verification of its existence, so you get an amplification, a self-feedback amplification of non-reality, which makes the so-called ego difficult to overcome.